Hey everybody. Good to see you all. Thanks, Dawn. Thanks, Regina, for that perfect teaching. All right, I'm going to start with a song. So, let me do that.
Can see clearly if anybody asks you who I am. Just stand up tall, look them in the face and say, stand up tall, look them in the face and say, I'm that mountain peak up high, I'm that star up in the sky. Hey, I made it, I'm the world's greatest. I'm that little bit of hope, with my back against the ropes, I can feel it. I'm the world's greatest. I'm that mountain peak up high, I'm that star in the sky. Hey, I made it, I'm the world's greatest. I'm that little bit of hope, with my back against the ropes, I can feel it. I'm the world's greatest.
And in the ring of life I'll reign long, and the world will notice the king.
Okay. That song was in a movie that we watched a couple weeks ago. I don't remember the movie, but I looked up the artist and the song, and it's a really sweet song. as I hear it, I see my attraction for it. It seems to represent moving from littleness to stepping into my function, I guess is the best way to put it. you can see I'm still reluctant to say moving in from littleness into greatness, but that's really what's here. And it's not, ain't she great, great. It's like, you know, moving into the truth of my being. And I see Anley in there. I did see, there she left. Oh, no, there she is. Hi, Ann. and I remember that was one of the things that Ann said to me early on in India, you know, why are you playing small? You know, ego would tell you that's humility. Playing small is humility, you know, so that's where you need to be. Who you claiming to be? What do you mean you're the world's greatest? But, you know, it's just another ego trick to keep you believing that you're limited. You, and I keep saying you, and it's me. It's all of us. But to keep you limited to these limited ideas of who you are. And so when we talk about, you know, looking at who I am, we're really talking about looking at the truth of me. In truth, who am I? I'm that mountain peak. I'm that marching band. I can see that as I become willing to step into what A Course in Miracles would call my grandeur, I become more comfortable being there. The other, the littleness, is a denial of the truth. It seemed like something else came to me this morning in the shower about humility. I got to get a pen and a pad, something that will write in the shower, because that's when all that stuff comes in, you know? But we read Way of Mastery Tuesday a week ago in Gentle Healing about humility. And I went, oh, that's what humility is. And actually now it just came back to me. I wrote for today's tip. Let me see if I can find that real quick. Oops, wait. Can't get around to my own computer here. Through our daily practice, we have come to understand that what we once thought occurred to us actually occurs through us. I'm going to read it one more time. Through our daily practice, we've come to understand that what we once thought occurred to us actually occurs through us. And that's humility, right? That's true humility. It's what we've often talked about. It's getting out of the way, and allowing what is to be, and allowing it to be here now. I was doodling and writing a little bit as Regina spoke. And let's see, I'm like, what? So how does this relate? But man, I was just guided to bring this up. Be here now. No comparison. Who is here now? So let me see if I can see how these things relate. Yeah, I think it's just really really just checking in to say who is here now. You know, not to assume it's this tiny little creature who's, as I wrote in the tip, whose little sickly little will is being relied upon to make something happen, to garner and communicate some truth. It's really turning it over. In the recognition that I'm done through. It strikes me that there's another way of looking at that line through our consistent, gentle, daily practice. We realize what we thought occurred to us occurs through us. That's a reference to our creative nature. Again, we read last night in The Way of Mastery. And of course, we've read it many times in NTI. You're creating all the time, whether you know it or not, whether you like it or not. So what happens doesn't happen in a vacuum. You know, I'm not the victim of the world that I see. It just came into my mind. There was a period when I was leaving my career, when I was beginning to get clarity about the way things worked. I was having a, I don't know why this is in the mind, but I was having these experiences of instant karma. So, you know, I'd put on a new blouse and I'd get a cup of coffee and I'd be, boy, I hope I don't get coffee on this shirt. Because it, you know, as soon as I could think it, it would happen. And a lot of things happened that way. And I think I was, you know, it was a primer, I think, a beginning understanding of the effect of my thoughts as creative, for good or bad. But I think, you know, going back to this idea of humility, I really think that I did that interview for Teachers of God that'll play in June. And one of the questions that Bill Free interviewed me, and one of the questions that Bill asked is something like, I don't know if I have it here, something like, you know, what do you... Here's the sheet. Yeah. As a teacher of God, what matters most to you when you're teaching? And I said, the ability to get out of the way. Yeah. So really it's about, you know, it's about becoming that empty shell. So when I say the song, again, back to the song, I'm the world's greatest. You know, I'm not talking about Jacqueline. I'm talking about the truth of who I am. And I only recognize that truth when I get out of the way. When I let go my beliefs about how great or how awful I am. And that recognition, that's humility. And there's the rejoinder from ego is, what? Who do you think you are? I mean, really, that's what I hear, and I hear it very clearly. Because ego doesn't understand humility. All right, yeah, so spent 15 minutes talking about the song, but wasn't that fun? All right, I'm like, what are you going to talk about? You know, you have, okay, since I've started writing these tips, I'm not journaling in the same way that I was before. It seems like most of my journaling is on the lesson, you know, in kind of in preparation for the tip, sometimes more so, sometimes less so. And also I have some journaling here in preparation for this Teachers of God interview. I just did like this, and Mom said, to Mom after Sunday's gathering, and she said it was really good. She said, but do you mind some criticism? I'm like, no. And she said, you scratch your head a lot when you talk. I don't know what that's about, but anyway, I just saw myself do it, so the thought went through the mind. You're scratching your head again. I think I'm trying to make room up there, you know. All right. So anyway, yeah, she couldn't even seen it in Pow Talk, right? Yeah. All right. So I'm just going to pick up here with the next thing in my journal. It's a ways back, and we'll see where it takes us. So one of the questions that was supposed to get asked in this interview, all right, I got another line of thinking here I want to talk about. Anyhow, I want to say that, as you guys know, because my God, since the moment I got invited till the moment the interview happened, boy, did I fret. Oh, my God, I can't do this. I'm not going to be able to do it. What do they want? Blah, 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 blah. Who do I think I am? Blah, 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 blah. Made all these lovely notes for this interview. Had them all situated up here where I can look at them and the camera at the same time. And they sent me a list of how the interview was going to go and what the questions were going to be. And it wasn't anything like that. I didn't look at the notes. In fact, I suspect that because I had the notes over here and the cameras here, I suspect I'm a little cross-eyed in that interview. but it was, it actually turned out to be very organic, you know. Jacqueline didn't have to do anything. You know, the question was asked and there was an answer. So again, it's that, you know, a bit of what Regina was talking about, you know, ego's going, you can't do this, blah, 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 blah. And none of that's true. None of it's true. You know, again, back to what we started with, it's part of just stepping into it. Just do it. Just do it. And see how it turns out. I mean, it's what's happening. To worry about it, to over-prepare for it, all of that is just a resistance of what is. It's a resistance to, yeah, Dawn trembled about that sharing, and last night in Gentle Healing, she's writing about that on the board now, and it was beautiful. It was absolutely beautiful. Yeah, Dawn says she felt all this fear, and so that made me want to do it. And in fact, I won't talk a lot about it, but that's one of the things that I've written for the deliverables, they call them, or really homework assignments for teachers of God, is you know, this exercise you all have probably heard me talk about before with expansion and contraction, you know. If somebody asks you to do something you don't want to do, if you feel fear, you get that contraction. And then the thing to do is to do what's expansive instead, right? And so you get to know that contrast. You can feel that contrast. As I worked on that assignment, I remembered that there was a very long period where that was a mantra. And you see, you don't die. Yes. Yes. That was a mantra for me, or a guiding light for me. Just step through the fear, whatever it is, just do what it takes to step through the fear. And like Dawn said, you learn you don't die. You step in to the true expansiveness of what you are. So, you know, it's really funny. This conversation we're having now is a living demonstration of, you know, because I didn't plan to talk about any of this, and I keep trying to go back to my journal, and I can't. Anyway, so I think I'll go there now. So, all right. So I journaled on one of the questions that they were supposed to ask me in this interview. I don't know what I ever actually got asked, but the question is, what does it mean to think the thoughts of Christ mind? And Inner Wisdom said, thinking, in quotes, thinking the thoughts of Christ mind is not thinking. It is allowing. It is allowing your heart to act as receiver of the flow of life. consistently allowing the flow of life to flow through you without objection is to recognize that the flow is experience. The power to shape experience does lie within you. But the desire to exercise such control is that which sustains the sense of being separate from it. Yeah, that sounds a little convoluted. What I'm hearing as I read it is, this is what you were just talking about, right? This is getting out of the way. This is being done through. So let me just, I'm just going to read it again. Thinking the thoughts of Christ's mind is not thinking. It is allowing. It is allowing your heart to act as receiver of the flow of life. Consistently allowing the flow of life to flow through you without objection is to recognize that the flow is experience. Yeah, and so I can see, we talk about removing the blocks to the awareness of love's presence. We talk about learning to let go of resistance. It's certainly revealed to me at some point, my desire to define myself is that which seemingly stops the flow. So it's that, it's this idea of self that we interpose between ourselves and experience. Consistently allowing the flow of life to flow through you without objection is to recognize that the flow is experience. The power to shape experience does lie within you. Right? I mean, that's a recognition of the creative power we've been talking about. So there's no question that, like it or not, know it or not, I do have power to shape my experience. The power to shape experience does lie within you, but the desire to exercise such control is that which sustains the sense of being separate from it. So one more time, I'm going to change the words a little bit for clarity. The power to shape experience does lie within you, but the desire to exercise control over that experience is what maintains your sense of separation from it. Right? Again, it's like my need for it to be different than it is. My need to have certain outcomes. My need to be perceived in a certain way. That is the very thing that removes me from the experience of what's been created by me in conjunction with all of the universe. It removes me from the experience of what's been created, the desire to control it, to have it different. And the following sentence says, you cannot both direct the flow and experience it unimpeded. The choice is yours, but if your true desire is to see with Christ's vision, you will let go the desire to direct the flow. It's like, tell me what it's really all about. Tell me what it's all about, Alfie, right? Tell me what life is, give me direct experience of what it really is, but I want it to go this way. Well, that's not direct experience of what it is. This is what I've asked to experience, something other than the direct experience of what really is. This is what I do when I attempt to manipulate life, when I attempt to direct the flow. You know, Regina was talking in her teaching about guidance may not make sense. And I know I wrote, I think it was for a tip a few weeks ago, you know, your question may be, how do I pay my mortgage? And the answer may be, go have an ice cream sundae. You know, it doesn't seem responsive to what I perceive as the problem. But the go have an ice cream sundae is an invitation to jump into that flow, jump into the flow of life unimpeded, without definition, to be empty and to just see what shows up. I mean, this is what we're looking for. Yeah, I don't want this life directed by Jacqueline Eckert anymore. Ugh. <You know? laughs> Somebody who thinks she knows what she's doing. How could I possibly know? How could I possibly know? The course talks about resigning as your own teacher. You have taught yourself poorly. Resign as your own teacher. I don't want to learn those lessons anymore. The ones brought about by my attempt to exert my puny little self-will. I want to join with the true will, which, by the way, is mine also. The true will, my true will, the will of the universe. Again, you cannot both direct the flow and experience it unimpeded. The choice is yours, but if your true desire is to see with Christ's vision, you will let go of the desire to direct the flow. Let's see the next thing written here. And this is, gosh, this is over a month ago. The next thing here says, excuse me. And I don't think it directly relates to what I had just written, but apparently I got some message somewhere because it says, Father, thank you for reminding me that the thoughts of the thinking mind are none of my business. What else would you share with me today? And I do see a relationship there now as I say it out loud. You know, the thinking mind would say, well, you need to do this, you need to do that. And like Regina said, you ignore ego thoughts just because they're ego thoughts. You know, the thoughts are there. They're there today. I don't know if they'll be there tomorrow or in 5 years or in 10 years. I hear them today. But I can just see those thoughts and go, yep, those thoughts are there, and not get involved with them. Let them remain none of my business. Either by saying, yep, you're right, or no, let me tell you why you're wrong. No, no, no. I just need to let them remain. None of my business. So anyway, let's see what Inner Wisdom says about that. Father, thank you for reminding me that the thoughts of the thinking mind are none of my business. What else would you share with me today? In response, I would encourage you to be careful and consistent in applying this remedy. Do not let thoughts slip into your belief. Remember that this phrase is not a mantra, but an absolute truth. You wish to know who you are without the concept of a self as center. This is how you will learn to see the truth in that idea, and as you requested, experience that truth. True seeing always leads to knowledge. It cannot but be so. It's not helpful to make yourself wrong when you become interested in what the thoughts have to say. Oh, shoot, I believe that thought again.
Yeah, right? Not helpful.
It's not helpful to make yourself wrong when you become interested in what the thoughts have to say. When you see that your believing attention has wandered to become aligned in interest with the supposed self, merely remind yourself that those thoughts and activities are none of your business and thus hold no interest for you. And then I asked, and what am I to do with a thought that seems persistent, that comes up to tempt my belief and interest again and again? And the response, the same is true once and many times. It is indeed the same reference Jesus made to forgiving your brother 70 times 7. No illusory thought has more power than another, no matter how persistent it seems. It is and remains none of your business. The more you use this remedy to distance or disassociate yourself from the thought of a separate and cohesive you, the greater peace and equanimity you will experience. Yeah, and I really feel that. I feel that, you know, these persistent thoughts that come up again and again and again and again, because they're so persistent, they seem to give consistency to this idea of a separate self. They have to be my thoughts. I keep having the same one over and over and over again. That has to be who I am. But it's not true. No one thought, let's see what he says here. No illusory thought has more power than another, no matter how persistent it seems. It is and remains none of your business, because I am not this illusory self. It's none of my business. The more you use this remedy to distance or disassociate yourself from the thought of a separate and cohesive you, the greater peace and equanimity you will experience. This equanimity is indeed the truth of you. This you are coming to learn. Okay, and I don't know, before I turn the page, these papers have been laying out here. Boy, do I need to clean my office. But anyway, these papers have been laying out here for a while. And there's a quote written at the top of this. I don't know who said it. I don't know when it got said, but it seems pertinent. And I'm led to read it before I throw this page in the trash here. It says, I'm not the owner. I'm just a guest of consciousness. And I don't know who said it. Regina could have said it. Rupert Spira. I don't know. But I love it because it's the same. It's the same idea, isn't it? It's the recognition that there is no consistent, cohesive self that is other than, that is opposed to, that is separate from the truth. There's no I to take ownership of a separate self. I'm not the owner, I'm just a guest. So I'm just going to take a look at the chat board because I'm full screen and need to pull that up separately. Shauna says we froze up on her. Let's see. Meg says she feels the same way about Meg. Meg's fired. thank you, Regina. Regina says that came from Tao teaching, lesson 15, part 1. Yay! So we have identified the source. Thank you, Regina. I'm not the owner. I'm just a guest. So let's look at what's next here. Let's see. So, my next question for Inner Wisdom. It was about a month ago, April the 1st. A Course in Miracles asks me to forgive myself and my brother. It also says that God does not forgive, because in order for forgiveness to be necessary, one must first condemn, and God does not condemn. This lesson seems unnecessarily laden with Christian terms, at the least unclear and bordering on inaccurate. No judgments there. I want to ask you what it means. Apparently the first thing I did was look it up, the word forgive. It says the Greek word translated as forgive in the New Testament carried a wide range of meanings, including to remit a debt, to leave something or someone alone, to allow an action, to leave, to send away, to desert or abandon, and even to divorce. There you go, Meg. You don't have to fire Meg. We can divorce her. I hereby divorce Jacqueline. And Inner Wisdom says, forgiveness indeed means to leave alone or to allow. To condemn is its opposite. To condemn would be to restrict another's actions, to fail to allow perfect freedom. Offering perfect freedom is forgiveness. It's no surprise that offering perfect freedom is also love. Love is offered through extension. Love extends without bounds, unimpeded by obstruction. Yeah, and there's that same idea again, right? You know, love is truth, is experience, is life, is awareness, and love extends without bounds. It's unimpeded by obstruction. So again, we talk about removing the blocks to the awareness of love's presence. And in my mind, I hear removing the blocks to the flow, to awareness of the flow of love. And this is what I do when I forgive. Love extends without bounds, unimpeded by obstruction. Thus, love and forgiveness extended to a brother is perfect allowance. Love and forgiveness extended to a brother is perfect allowance. Well, that is really different than mine and perhaps your past conception of what love is. You know, oh, I'm going to be only love. Well, what does that mean? It means to get out of the way, right? and allow life to flow, to let whoever be whoever, let whatever be whatever, whatever happens, happen, without needing it to be a certain way, without thinking that you know, you're in the way of whatever I think needs to happen. Love extends without bounds, unimpeded by obstruction. Thus, love and forgiveness extended to a brother is perfect allowance. Love is contrasted with fear in this lesson, because fear is that which does not allow. Right? What else would make you think things need to be a certain way? It's like Regina was talking about a while ago. This is real. If you don't do this, this and this and this is going to result. If you quit your job, how are you going to pay your mortgage? How are you going to raise your kid? So it's that fear of what would happen if I allow life experience to be what it is. Love is contrasted with fear in this lesson because fear is that which does not allow. Fear is that which does not expand, but contracts. To condemn, it sounds like a definition I looked up. To condemn is to express an unfavorable or adverse judgment on. To condemn is to express an unfavorable or adverse judgment on. Thus, condemnation perfectly expresses the opposite of freedom. And what I see here is, it's none of my business what seems to be happening, what you seem to be doing, what seems to be going on here. Again, any thoughts about that is a condemnation, is the opposite of this perfect allowance, this perfect freedom, the extension of love. Condemnation perfectly expresses the opposite of freedom. Pure consciousness has no fixed position. As such, it cannot condemn. Yeah, and I have tears in my eyes. It just feels like a real recognition of a truth beyond the words. You know, I say, oh, consciousness is perfect allowance, but what does that mean, right? Pure consciousness has no fixed position. Wow. And of course, the next thing that's coming in for me is this. We watched for Gentle Healing Year One, we watched What the Bleep last week. And we talked about the quantum field and how the superposition of things in the quantum field. And, you know, that limited view, as opposed to the limited view we seem to have as humans, you know, where I can only see it one way. It's got to go this way. It's got to go this way because this is the position I'm looking at it from. When in fact, that's not my position at all. Consciousness is everywhere. It's one thing everywhere. An infinite possibility, not just the possibility, even an infinite position all of the time is consciousness, is who we are, is what the quantum field is. So Inner Wisdom says, pure consciousness has no fixed position. As such, it cannot condemn. I feel like the... I'll let that be. I was just going to say, I feel like the hop back up there into the thinking mind for a moment, but I'm noticing that as always, everything comes together to support the lesson that I would learn. And for that, I'm grateful. Pure consciousness has no fixed position. As such, it cannot condemn. Its allowance is inherent in its nature. It is not an action taken. It is simply the absence of judgment. It is this absence of judgment that nurtures true nature and permits me to extend unimpeded the love that I am. You are that which seeks to extend. The act of allowance is actually the act of creation. Though you would picture it as a stagnant, empty space devoid of life, understand that this is the ego's view of allowance. All right. If you insist. I'll just stay in here while stuff happens around me, right? You are that which seeks to extend. The act of allowance is actually the act of creation. Though you would picture it as a stagnant, empty place, devoid of life, understand that this is ego's view of allowance. Think of a gushing river. This is a better symbol for the extension of life and love. Allowing yourself to be swept up within the extension of love is forgiveness. Withholding forgiveness or judging that things need be different seemingly removes you from the stream of life and brings you to the stagnant position of fear and lovelessness. In this way, powerful, in this way, it can only be yourself whom you condemn. That's amazing. That's amazing to me. Wow. So let me just start back up. It's amazing to me beyond words, but maybe we'll find some here. Let me start back up at this with this image. Think of a gushing river. This is a better symbol for the extension of life and love. Allowing yourself to be swept up within the extension of love is forgiveness. And for me, I could really feel the life in that, the potentiality of that, right? The excitement in that. Allowing yourself to be swept up within the extension of love is forgiveness. Withholding forgiveness or judging that things need to be different seemingly removes you from the stream of life, the gushing river of excitement, the flow of what is, and brings you to the stagnant position of fear and lovelessness. In this way, it can only be yourself whom you condemn. Thus, when you forgive your brother, when you allow him perfect freedom, you are both swept within the stream of life. You're both. Oh, I thought I was going to be one thing and another thing, but that's not what this is saying. It's both, me and my brother. So let me read that correctly. Thus, when you forgive your brother, when you allow him perfect freedom, you are both swept within the stream of life. You are both released from your fixed positions in which you are moored. And then it was a dictionary day because I looked up the word moored, and it says make fast a boat by attaching it by cable or rope to the shore or to an anchor. And how perfect is that, right? That's that stagnant thing as life gushes by. Well, I'm stranded here, tied to the shore. So let me just read that one more time. When you forgive your brother, when you allow him perfect freedom, you are both swept within the stream of life. You are both released from your fixed positions in which you are moored. And this feels like a bit of a switch. The next paragraph, and probably not, the next paragraph says, beingness itself, or the absolute, or God, neither contracts nor expands. In beingness itself, beyond dimensionality, there is no need for correction. It is this the Course in Miracles lesson addresses with its Christian terminology. And this is a quote, so this must be from the lesson. Forgiveness is the great need of this world, but that is because it is a world of illusions. Those who forgive are thus releasing themselves from illusions, while those who withhold forgiveness are binding themselves to them. As you condemn only yourself, so do you forgive only yourself. As the world itself was created through judgment, so it is maintained by judgment. Forgiveness is the correction and thus the release from illusion. And I think this is, once again, a quote from that lesson. Fear condemns and love forgives. Forgiveness thus undoes what fear has produced, returning the mind to the awareness of God. And I'm just going to read the next, we got just a few minutes left. I'm going to go ahead and read the, at least beginning reading the next entry. I'm sure it's in reference to a lesson. It looks like it. This giving over of my will may strike me at first as a sacrifice, giving up something I seem to want or need in order to gain something I want more. Giving over of my will may strike me at first as a sacrifice, giving up something I seem to want or need in order to gain something I want more. However, giving in to the mystery, allowing myself to be swept into that river of life, giving in to the mystery is nothing more than giving up the need to know or control something I can't control anyway. As we move through life, we seem to have the impression that without care and maintenance of the circumstances of life, we will be left bereft of love, of necessities, etc. It is this fear which feeds itself. We really are asked simply to watch. Who would move around the chess pieces but the personal, non-existent self? In order to get in touch with that which lies beyond the need and seek conditioned, the need and seek, should have been in quotes. In order to get in touch with that which lies beyond the need and seek conditioned self, we can begin to practice the awareness watching awareness method as we go about our daily lives. We can ask ourselves, who sees what the eyes perceive? Who hears what the ego, who hears what the ears report? How does this blanket feel? What is my actual experience in this moment now? This removes the narrator, definer, describer from between awareness and experience. This practice cuts through the veil of the personal self. This is direct experience of experience. All right. I love you guys. I'm very grateful for the opportunity to share. Great love, and see you next time.